The views expressed on the following show may not be those of the hosts, guests, or WSPN Skidmore Radio. Talk Saratoga is produced by Saratoga Broadcasting Incorporated and may not be reproduced in part or in whole unless expressed written approval is given. Now, here are the hosts of Talk Saratoga, Rick Thompson and a Saratoga All-Star.
Good morning and happy Saturday. We are here today with a special guest. I want to welcome Sue Beebe, who's the Assistant Director / Agriculture Issue Leader for the Saratoga County Cooperative Extension. And Sue is a regular up to a couple years ago when she got hurt, but she's a regular a couple times a year on the show, and we're glad to have you back. Good morning, Sue.
Good morning, Rick. Thank you very much. Good to be back.
Yeah, it is. It's good to see you again. Sue, one of the first things I think that I want to ask you is how did the cooperative extension come through pandemic? What adjustments did you have to make last year?
Okay, well, we did make several different adjustments. The first adjustment, of course, was to just make sure that we could get our staff up to speed on being able to work remotely. So that was a huge adjustment. And then we really did change, all of our educational meetings from in-person meetings to remote learning. And that was, a big learning curve for a few folks. A few of us had done a bunch of remote learning, not to the same extent that we've done over the last 18 months. It definitely was, it kept us on par, kept us going with things. And, of course, with the ag industry, we were still doing direct field work, with our producers. But for the rest of the general public and for our school programs, everything was done remotely. Our school educator set up a wonderful little, facility in the basement of her home. And, she was still in the classrooms on a daily basis throughout the entire pandemic.
Mm-hmm. I know it was everybody had to make adjustments, of course. And with you serving such a vast number of people, not only farms and in the other agriculture industry, but I tried to get a soil sample done last year, and they told me the fella that was going to do it told me he didn't think he could get it analyzed because they were using all the machines for testing for a vaccine.
Yeah, no, there was definitely some slowdowns in certain processes, that we had. And doing full soil analysis did take a little bit longer last year because there were certain equipment was being used for other things. And so until they really could open up equipment, we did have a little bit of slowdown in the full analysis end of things. But the great part about it was, even though we weren't seeing people directly coming into the office, walking in with everything, we developed our Dropbox system that we had thought about doing for years, but just never did. Mm-hmm. And it's really working out great because people, still, even though they've been able to at least, come to the office and drop things off, are still utilizing this Dropbox system that we have all the time. And it's wonderful because it does encourage people where they normally would have said, you're open Monday through Fridays. I have a difficult time getting there. You can drop things off on the weekend. We're still constantly always, watching because with all of our events, we're in and out all weekend long anyway, somebody in the office. So we're always looking at things. So this has worked very, very well for us. And we've been able to really, serve the public, I think, in a lot of greater means. And we also started to put on a routine lunch-to-learn session rather than just our specialty courses that we would normally have. We put on some good general educational sessions. And, so we've had audiences of, well over, 100, 200 people attending via Zoom. So it has been, we've really been able to continue that wide reach out to the public.
Excellent. Everybody had to adapt and learn new things last year, but in a way I wish we could just go back to the year previous and keep going the way we were going. I mean, everything's done in somewhat of a new sense, and quite frankly, I don't like it. I mean, I don't like change, number one, but it just seems like last year was such a waste that of that. I just, you know, I'm just sick of talking about things about in-class learning and all that, you know.
Yeah, you know, what the new normal, you know, I guess, you know, that's that key term. What is the new normal going to be? You know, I do think that there were steps that we were making in a lot of what our educational means were that we were kind of holding off on doing. But I honestly think that some of this was a very beneficial means when it comes down to a lot of the educational pieces that we have. We have been able to teach people where to look for the right information when they're going to the internet. Where I would have to say in our in-person trainings, we probably didn't emphasize certain things as much, but when we were doing them remotely, we were able to really emphasize that to folks. And honestly, I do feel that for some areas that people are really taking a much stronger look, and they really are paying attention now to what that informational source is mm-hmm. before they start seeking, you know, the solution. Which in the past, you know, they would honestly have believed anything that's on the internet must be true. And I do believe that we've actually managed to get through to a large portion of our audience, you know, where they really need to be looking for the correct information.
Sure. I thought everything that it was on the internet is true.
Of course it is.
Oh,
Rick.
My gosh. Sue, I want to just backstep a little bit. And maybe you could tell us what the extension serves, about the cooperative extension.
Okay. Well, Cornell Cooperative Extension is really the kind of, I guess, in simple terms, we're the educational arm of Cornell University. What we do is we take researched-based information, what has come out through the various trainings, not just through research done through Cornell folks, but through the USDA and other land-grant universities, and are able to turn that into easier terms for people to understand than some of the scientific reports, and feed that to them with, you know, the most upcoming information, whether that be on a disease, on an insect, how to process foods, you know, whatever the case may be. Cornell Cooperative Extension has three program areas. You know, we have our agricultural area, we have our youth development, and we have our family consumer science area. So we're delving with everything from the 4-H program is the highlight of our youth development program, but we're also working very directly with all the school systems as well in doing in-school programming. You know, so we're really going from, and those programs can be anything from, you know, bird identification, you know, where's Mars, you know, there's all kinds of different programs that will tie into their science curriculums that they have at school. So we do definitely tie into both the science and the math with those programs. And then in another area in our 4-H youth development has been our STEM programming. We do have a couple of really great robotics teams that really have gone to competitions and done extremely, you know, fantastic jobs at competitions. And it was one of those teams that started to actually do some of the initial face mask coverings, the, you know, the plexi coverings. Mm-hmm. You know, they're one of the first groups in the capital area that actually started making those. So it really, you know, we really delve into all of that youth education. Our family consumer science program, we deal highly with nutritional programs. Diane Witten, who is our nutritionist on staff, has done a phenomenal job with doing programs throughout the state and national on food preservation. So we, you know, we really have a big inroad into that area. And then our ag program is not just the routine agriculture that you may think of for production ag, but we also have within those programs stormwater management. And in our office, we're lucky enough to house the what we call the PRISM program, and that is a partnership for invasive species management. Mm-hmm. And that is a really great program as well. And so we, out of our office, serve, you know, our eastern region here from the foothills of the Adirondacks, you know, down through Albany County. So, you know, we have some really great things that kind of covers, I would say, you know, all kinds of great research information that we can then bring to folks and let them know what's really happening out there, what's some of the new things that they can be, you know, looking forward to, and, you know, how's the best way to even just, you know, a simple question like, you know, what pH should I be growing my arborvitae at?
Sure.
You know,
so, sure.
I mean, we can go from the simplest to the most complex, and that's what we're here to do. We're here to give that information that's been out there and researched.
Well, yeah, I mean, we've talked about 4-H in the past, and last week I told you we had a girl, Victoria Treadwell, whose father owns a farm in Herkimer County, and she was involved in 4-H through, you know, school and probably in all the programs, and she ended up becoming a dairy princess. And she was surprised, I think, that I knew a little bit about the 4-H and Dairy Princess, but you've been on the show so many times, I felt like I was a Dairy Princess. But
well, we also had the Dairy Princess come to various meetings, too.
That's what I told her. That's how I found out about them. And she was surprised I knew about the milk punch and cheese and crackers. But anyway, she told us, I mean, she's so knowledgeable on this stuff growing up on a farm. But one of the questions I had asked her was, did 4-H make a difference in your life? Because she's now an operating technician for a bone and joint doctor. And I said, did that give you any benefit to help you in your career? And she said, yes, very much so. It made me more confident, you know, thinking-wise. So 4-H does more than just teach the kids' agriculture knowledge.
Yeah, one of the great things in the 4-H program that really comes to be is every year there is what we call a presentation day. And the presentation day is when you can present a topic that you have some interest in to a panel of some judges, as well as the audience that sits out there and listens to you. And you're doing this from the age of being what we would call even a clover bud, you know, who is, you know, 5 years old, you know, straight on up through your 4-H career. And the youth that participate in those presentation days, you can really see a big difference in that as you move on through schooling. And even when even back in the day when I was in college, ooh, the professors would say, you know, they could tell who was involved in a program like 4-H or FFA because they had participated in doing presentations when they were younger, and they could see the difference in the communication skills and confidence levels that really come through for the individuals. So
yeah,
it really does help really build a background. And, you know, it gives the great thing about a lot of our programs is they really build on your life experiences,
mm-hmm,
you know, and things for you to be using down the line. And even my son, who would hem and haw when we were taking him to 4-H horticulture class, you know, and you know, going on to nationals to, you know, compete in the national level. And he would sit there. Now he says today, as he's gardening on his own, you know, out in Illinois, he'll go like, you know, I really wish I listened a little more on this one particular aspect than others, you know, because those are the life skills that you have down the line that you're going to be working with. And, you know, that's one of the great things about our program. And that's why we just love doing it. And right now, one of our programs in ag is called a farm to school program, where we're working with the producers to get the local, you know, product into our school cafeterias. And in doing so, we're going into the classrooms more to actually talk about agriculture on a whole, where in the school systems, agriculture wasn't really necessarily delved into as an individual aspect you know, 10 years ago, where now we're really starting to bring it back into the classroom and letting, you know, our youth really understand more about how various types of agricultural products are produced and, you know, where things really come from. And it's not like, you know, down at the local corner store.
Well, you know, it's funny because we got talking. She's a very brilliant person, and she loves farming, wants, and of course, it's probably your dairy princess background, educate people about the dairy industry. And, you know, if it wasn't for farmers, we'd be in a heap big trouble. I told her a story about a friend of mine, one of the kids that I used to pick up for school and transport. His mother had chickens, and she would sell eggs. Well, he wouldn't eat them because, yeah, you know, the chickens that run around his house laid the eggs. He thought eggs came from the supermarket in the containers. He didn't know they came from chickens.
That's exactly right.
You know, and I really think that that children in school, we should go back a little bit to the basics of foundation. I mean, it's like, you know, when you get older, the Master Gardening program kicks in so you can grow a garden, produce, you know, products for yourself, especially in today's world.
Absolutely.
It's only going to get wackier, I'll tell you. And one of the things I think that the extension does, it's a homesteading and self-sufficiency program. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, okay. So we do have a really good series that goes on with homesteading. You know, we have a good video series for it, and we do have some very individualized programs into that. You know, what we're really trying to encourage folks to do is realize what the sustainability really can be for individuals. You know, we really could do a lot more to, you know, make sure that we have, you know, successful lives through developing our own foods and being able to, you know, all of those programs that we talked about before really all fit into this. It's, you know, it's what kind of livestock farming can you do? What can you do on a small amount of acreage? You know, what's the minimal that you would really need to have in order to do so? These are all things that we're, you know, teaching through these homesteading programs. We're also looking at timber management for folks who have property and are trying to decide what to do with it. You know, what do you do with your woodlot? You know, you really just can't let everything go. You really do have to keep doing some cutting in order to keep things growing correctly and keep the environmental conditions where we really want them to be, because otherwise we do affect our ecosystem in a negative fashion. So, you know, homesteading ties into that as well. You know, so permaculture programs, we've done a lot of permaculture programs in the past 3 or 4 years, which is really, you know, it's a combination of not just the annual vegetable garden end of it, but it's the perennial crops that should be tied into things, you know, so that you're getting into small fruit productions, you know, some fruit trees, things along the line that are going to help sustain down the road and be able to be supplemented. So, you know, it's, you know, for those who, you know, maybe have a streaming service that can go back and take a look at some of the old programs like, you know, Little House on the Prairie or something along that lines. Realistically, you know, sustainability agriculture falls into some of those realms.
Sure.
You know, but if you mention Little House on the Prairie to a child today, they have no idea what you're talking about.
Well, you know, it's you know what, though? It's funny because I think people that are in agriculture or someone like our guest last week read all the books, but I don't know if she saw the TV shows. I mean, she's young,
right,
but they're on reruns, but I don't think to count them, but she said, I read every book, and at least you get a sense of what they had to put up with back then.
You know, so, you know, that, so sustainability is, it's been great with, one of the things, and I know that you were saying that you really want things to get back to, you know, like the way we were, but I think one of the great things that actually came out of the pandemic was having people really take a stronger look at things like, what can I do at my own place? Mm-hmm. And, you know, we knew we saw a boom in gardening last year. You know, and the question was going to be whether that was going to be maintained or not coming into, you know, 2021. Well, it's excelled. It's even gone further. We have new gardeners again coming into the realm of it. So it's really picking back up. Not only did we maintain who we had, but we have those new gardeners who really have seen something totally different about how I can just go into my backyard and harvest something, talk to other friends, and now they're also picking up gardening. Yeah. So, you know, some things have really, you know, increased, and I think, you know, are making people think more about what it is that we do have. And sometimes maybe it is more of a movement toward, I know I can control it. You know, mm-hmm. So I know that, you know, whatever I'm growing, I can control what goes on to it. And so sometimes some of the, you know, gardeners are really getting into it because they're unsure of the organic product that they're buying at the farmer's market is truly organic. So as they get into growing it on their own and find out all the problems you can run into, they're yeah. realizing that, well, sometimes you do have, you either have to plant way over what you're hoping to get in order to get what you want, or you are going to potentially have to use something to help control issues down the line. And it's really becoming a great learning experience for many folks who have never gardened before. And I'm talking, it doesn't matter what age we're talking about. I have some friends who are gardening for the first time this year who are, you know, 60 plus.
Yeah. Well, you know, excuse me, I have a friend, and he built a huge raised garden last year. And I mean huge. And he's planted everything in there, and he had a good return on the crops last year. And, you know, I'll tell you, prices are going up so high that if you to be a vegetarian, I think it's more expensive than if you eat meat, actually, because produce is so high.
It definitely can be.
Yeah. And but there's nothing worse than buying an organic tomato and having a sticker on it that says product of Mexico. I mean, yeah, that's not good. Grow it yourself.
Well, that I do understand. Yeah, no, but that's the great thing about, you know, what you can do. And even if it is just going to be something as simple as a tomato plant on the back, you know, on the patio, you know, that's how a lot of different gardeners have really started out, is just one thing that they, you know, really wanted to have. And, you know, and then their interest grows from there.
Sure. I want to get into some Saratoga County farm facts.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what. agriculture is still the number one industry.
We are still the number one industry. Yes, we are.
Okay. My figures are back from 2017.
That is the most recent accurate figures.
Okay. And it says that there were 583 farms in the county.
Mm-hmm.
And why don't you tell us, you know, give us some figures and about the, you know, facts.
Okay, so where our farming numbers are, and, you know, the 583 farms is actually kind of an increase from a few years ago versus a decrease, which really is a plus for Saratoga County. And when people think of that and they take a look at what's happening out there, you have to realize that that farms aren't just large dairy farms or large horse farms. We're talking produce farms, straight down to just the, you know, and as well as, horticultural operations would be included in that as well. So when you're looking at this, our dairy farm numbers have actually decreased slightly. Our numbers of head of animals, on the other hand, have not decreased. So some of our farms that are still in existence have increased the number of head they have that they're working with. Because as a farm goes out, those animals get sold off to someone. So, a lot of it has remained local in the past few years. So we've had an increase in the heads on some of the farms, while we still have had a decrease by just a few. We're not dropping by large numbers, but we have lost a few in the last few years. So a lot of our increase actually has been in the area of produce farms. Okay. We do have a lot more small-scale produce growers that we really have. And that's everywhere from whether it's blueberries or strawberries on that small-scale production to just, vegetable gardening of sorts. Part of our gardening projects that we've had over the last few years have we've seen a little bit of growth maybe in our community-supported ag. Community-supported ag is what we call CSAs.
Okay.
I don't usually spell that out as community supported, so right. I can't even say the words today. But our CSA farms, which is where you buy into the farm, and then you get whatever is grown at the farm, whatever is good that year, you get a portion of that that's given to you on a weekly basis during the growing season. And many of our CSAs have more than one way of working with them. One way is you also buy in and do some time with them, so that therefore you're paying a little bit less because you're giving manual labor. And other ones are you're just paying an outright fee and you're not volunteering time to the farm. We actually are seeing some increase in folks who are very interested in that volunteering on the farm. They really want to know what goes into that production. And I think through that over the past few years, we've seen some folks actually decide to get into a small scale production on their own. So we do have an increase within that area. And that's why our numbers, appear much higher than, when people are out there looking, they say, when I drive around Saratoga County, it's hard for me to believe that there's that many farms. Small-scale production farms, you're not going to really necessarily, they're not going to stand out like a horse farm or a dairy farm is.
So if I get this right, let's say you have a dairy farm and you have a lot of acreage that you're not using. If you leased for labor a piece of that property, for them to garden or whatever, and they would give back time and to help the farm out for a couple hours here and there. Is that what? An exchange?
So what it really would be is our CSAs are really done as strictly produce farms. We really don't have any of our animal farms participating in CSAs.
Okay.
Some of our small livestock farms could, but we really don't have any doing that. They really are, produce farms. So what it really, boils down to is, you're paying a set fee so that you receive product throughout the growing season for you to use at home. So you're receiving that food, but you have two different ways of going about it. One way is to also volunteer some time and pay a lesser fee so that you're supplying some manual labor to the farm.
Right.
And then you're also able to see how your food is really being grown and what happens. And the other way is to just strictly buy into, the produce itself.
Okay. Look into the CSA for dairy farms. Because I'll tell you, one of the problems today is in any other business, farms, especially dairy farms, I would think, are family owned. Well, there's a large percent. What is it, 90%?
A very large percent is family owned. And most, when you take a look at our farms, most of our dairy farms are definitely, owned by that older generation without having, a younger generation moving up into it
right
at this moment in time. So, we are, labor is an issue everywhere. Labor right. is an issue no matter what. And, you know, it seems that, you know, through this pandemic, labor isn't even a bigger issue than it even maybe was before. But we really, you know, it has always been agriculture because it's a 24/7, 365 days a week job. Is something that a lot of folks have not necessarily wanted to move into.
Right. You either like it or you don't. And the sad part about it is, see, I learned a lot about dairy farming last week. But I guess a lot of what happens is that if you have to sell your farm because there's no one to take it over, a huge conglomerate takes it over, may buy it, or they may buy the property to develop and, you know, they just take your dairy cows away. But it's too bad that it can't be passed down like from generation to generation like it used to be, you know.
You know, we're very lucky here in Saratoga County because we still do have a lot of multi-generational farms, you know, that are there. And granted, we do have a couple of multi-generation farms that actually have changed what they do over time. For instance, let's just take Saratoga Sod as an example because it's a prime example. It was a large dairy farm for years and years, you know, went through the generations. I can't even think of what generation we're in right now, you know, that Steve would be. I don't know. But when they went out with the dairy buyout years ago and turned into sod, but they're not only sod, they're also some row crop farming. So they do a little bit of, you know, soy and some other things because, you know, so that they're supporting agriculture and the ag industry in multifaceted ways, not just horticulture, but also the animal industry with some other row crop production that they're doing. So, you know, farms can change as they move through things, as you're looking at stuff, you know. It was not profitable any longer to really remain in you know, his father's eyes of, you know, a dairy farm. And it was at that moment that we actually had a buyout program, and it was a great way to move the industry but stay in ag. And it really, you know, and of course, you know, they're extremely successful with the sod farm.
Sure. They're the largest.
So there is, you know, we see some of those kinds of things that can happen as well with farms as you're moving through. So we are very lucky here in Saratoga because we do still have a lot of farms that are passing from generation to generation, you know, but maybe not in the same fashion as somebody may have seen them, you know, 20 years ago.
Yeah. You know, when you were talking about CSA and the word, you know, you never used the term. Too bad Lynn wasn't here. He'd be babbling. He'd still be babbling on the mic trying to get that out.
It's really bad when you don't, when you're so used to using more of an acronym and you don't think about the whole thing.
Tell me about it. It's tough. Yeah. One of the other areas that moves into agriculture, especially gardening, is your Master Gardener program. And I know that you have to sign up way early in the beginning of the year.
Here in Saratoga County, Saratoga, Warren, Washington, Fulton, Montgomery, you know, we do our training in the winter. So we actually start our trainings in January and we run all the way through May, doing our trainings for our Master Gardener volunteers. So our sign up for the program, actually, we're taking names in now. We send our applications out the end of August, you know, so we kind of compile all the names now at this time of year when people are thinking about, I might like to do it. And we send our applications out the end of August so that they can be turned around and come back to us so that we can get our, you know, program up and running for January. This, you know, of course, 2020, we started our program in person, and of course, we needed to immediately transition to remote. Cornell had been actually asking us to do some remote trainings for Master Gardeners more than in person. They wanted us to actually increase the amount of remote learning that we did with them in the first place. So 2020 made us do that. our 2021 course, we did not have any in-person trainings. They were all remote trainings. And now our volunteers are coming out in person to, you know, work with us and do the hands-on things at this moment in time. The Cornell model in 2018 was actually moving to remote learning, which was really kind of, we were holding off here in Saratoga County doing that because I'm a big in-person person.
Sure.
And so I think we're probably going to be somewhat hybridized for the future with our program in Saratoga. We will definitely have in-person meetings, but we definitely are going to still continue with some of them being remote meetings as well. It does actually help open the window some to folks who are snowbirds for Saratoga, because we are not doing the trainings in the fall of the year when they would be around still. We are due to our trainings during that winter time. Having some remote learning capabilities can help some folks who have wanted to do it but haven't really necessarily been able to do it. And honestly, I haven't really seen that come to fruition yet, but that's what Cornell was really hoping was going to happen for New York State. So we'll see what really happens. I don't really know where we're going for sure. As I say, we'll be more hybridized in 2022.
All right. Let's talk just a little bit about what a master gardener is. And I know you train volunteers to be master gardeners, but then what happens after they become a master gardener?
Okay. In order to be a master gardener, all you need to do is have an interest in gardening. We really don't ask for you to have any experience in gardening. What we do is we train you everything from the basics. Our first sessions are always on soils. So we train you in the area of that, and we take you through a lot of production, a lot of different things that is out there, you know, how to grow various crops, things for you to be looking at, problems that certain crops are going to run into. And so what we train you as a volunteer to do is have the capability to recognize that this is a situation, that this is a problem that maybe need to be addressed, and be able to familiarize yourself with resources to then find the answer for the person who's asking the question. So that's really what they do as a volunteer. So when they complete that program, they come, they work at various garden sites throughout the community. They go to tabling events, be it farmers markets. We have an event, going on, like this weekend where you're at a community festival in a township. Whatever the cases may be, we really encourage our volunteers to really get involved with community projects that are out there on gardening, be it through whether it's in the school system or whether it might be the senior center and other places, through their Y program that's local with them. We do a lot of gardening efforts there as well. So they're there to help work as a responsive resource for folks who, we've trained them to be able to find the resource. They're there to help feed some of that information back to the individuals, as well as, help them identify what the problem situations are that they may have.
Okay. Well, that's excellent. Volunteers are amazing.
We have some volunteers who are with our program who have been with us for many, many years. And then you have other volunteers that are, with you for a short period of time. We welcome all. Anybody who wants to do some volunteering, we do have volunteer requirements. We do have an X amount of hours to complete things, in order to get their Master Gardener certification, so there are some hours that are mandated to them, but, you're able to select from things that you like doing. And some of your volunteer hours actually can be just simply researching and writing articles that we can utilize in newsletters and other places. So, there's a lot of different ways to share the expertise share the knowledge you have learned through the Master Gardener program. It's very interesting that every year we get some folks who are involved in the industry. We encourage industry to send some of their workers to us. So every year we get folks who are involved in the industry that, come and take the program. And it is amazing that they just, you know, sit there and are amazed at the kinds of things that they now have learned. And they go back and just encourage others to come and take the program as well. So we've made some very good, rides in really getting the industry trained out there for workers who are remaining and that aren't just seasonal employees with a lot of the, you know, local companies in the area.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm just looking at some of the, information I downloaded and the top 10 agricultural products. And I'm just looking at the first four or five, and it's milk,
mm-hmm.
corn for grain.
Okay.
Hay.
Okay.
Cattle and calves. Now, you look at what the top five are geared to, and it's cows. It's milking cows.
It is milking cows, yes.
I mean,
That is correct. You know, you need to have all of those row crops, all of that hay, everything else to maintain those animals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's why the largest portion of what you have there is going to go to that. Because that's what you're trying to do. We need to develop the feed in order to then maintain that animal. Once we get past that area of, you know, once we get past the dairy industry and then we start looking at our other top crops, you know, we can, that's where we start to see things in the lines of, even right now, the horticulture industry is still pretty high up there
right.
for New York State, and especially here in Saratoga County. And it's probably a little higher in Saratoga, maybe in dollar value, just because we actually do have a sod farm. And that sod farm is supplying sod for, you know, the great, you know, large portion of the Northeast, not just here in Saratoga.
Well, you know, also we have a lot of summer runners and all the way, you know, up to Lake George and all over. And so, you know, the flower business industry is still going because these people come up and they want to plant their window boxes or, and I mean, when you're a big tourist town, I mean, I hate to think the number of flowers to track by, you know, so they're still going halfway.
Oh, absolutely.
So, you know, I mean, different areas have different items that are larger or smaller at some point in the year.
Correct. Now, if you take a look at the New York State, sales, what's number one in New York State, dairy still falls within your top, 10 range, but it's not right up there at the very top because there are other things that sell a larger dollar value mm-hmm. than what happens with, you know, the dairy industry.
Dairy products. I just want to talk a little bit about something that really irritates me, especially with what's going on today, and get your opinion.
Oh, I'm not sure I want this, Rick.
Excuse me. Yes, I need your opinion on something.
Okay.
I'm not a big believer in climate change. And I think my feeling is what leads to the largest percentage of climate change aren't humans. You remember when they were talking about clearing the rainforest in South America and people were all upset, up in arms, we got to do this, we got to do that because the rainforest protect the environment. Look how many trees we've cut down in areas because of building development, just clear for fields or whatever, just to have clearing fields. And those trees play an important part of keeping carbon dioxide from going into the atmosphere
mm-hmm.
to create the global warming, to create that layer of that helps global warming. And we have volcanoes that erupt, that throw ash into the air. And I was reading an article about this scientist who in 2015 in Iceland, there were 3,000 volcanic eruptions within a year. and the largest one threw 1 cubic mile of lava and ash into the air. So that, I feel that the tree part is the most important because that causes soil erosion. The trees, you know, can't absorb the carbon dioxide to give off the oxygen. And that's a huge factor, I think, in global warming. Now, we certainly do have a carbon imprint, humans do, but I don't think it's as big, I don't anyway, in reading, you know, the articles that I read.
We do have a big carbon imprint as humans. You know, I think everything ties in together in order to, you know, pull together what kinds of, what's happening with the environment. So it really, it's a combination, you know, and that's really drawn upon that. So, you know, some of it is definitely, you know, can be related back to, you know, the trees definitely will play a part in that. But, you know, we as a society do more than lots of times we really want to believe we do. So I think both of the things come playing together in making that change in climate. And you know, reality base is, you know, climate's been changing for, you know, hundreds of years.
Yes.
You know, it's just, you know, what where's our increase now? And it's, you know, as you're developing, you know, as we are finding, you know, where we are seeing some increases within some of that carbon footprint, we have then seen some changes that have started to occur at a slightly faster pace than they have throughout all of these, you know, other centuries. So I do feel that that really is in part of, you know, what we are doing as humans out there.
Well, I read an article and that the French government bought 5,000 cars for employees, all electric powered. So they had to get rid of them because they weren't running. They kept breaking down, and to change a battery out, it's like $10,000. So they showed a huge acreage of these cars sitting there, and the batteries are leaking because there's still bad stuff in these electric batteries. The batteries are leaking all over. They can't find anywhere to dispose of them. So I think in our zeal to find better products, we're falling far short of it, and I think we're creating more of a problem than I don't know. It's just when you see this stuff, it just kind of puts you off, you know.
Yeah, no. I think that oftentimes it gets caught into that where you're just more looking at that catch 22, because as you try to move forward with one thing, you get set back with another.
Sure.
You know, and so you just, you know, you're not necessarily making that same stride,
right,
you know, that you were hoping to.
See, with me, I'd rather look for ways to improve the use of fossil fuels to make them cleaner, because we have a lot of that product already, and you know, it's a big industry.
Well, they are definitely working on that, you know, so then it's just a matter of, you know, everything takes time.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, you
but we got to keep the pipelines open. We can't be closing them all down.
Well,
that's another story for another day. But you know, when I read that California has 149 million dead trees and they have the wildfires out there, and they wonder why they take so much property. I mean, when you have kindling on the ground because of they're not cleaning the forest up, and you have all that kindling.
Well, but you've got, you know, you're having that situation because you have drought stresses that are occurring, which drought stresses are occurring because you've got climatic changes and you've got a difference in the air movement and the air streams, which are causing those excessive droughts. So, you know, they all intertwine and they all play in there together, which makes it very difficult to really kind of pinpoint one specific thing.
Well, no, and like you said, forest management, where you don't, you have to go in and cut trees down and log them. I mean, it's like the Adirondack Park. You can't go in and log, you know, and you need that sometimes. Otherwise, you're shrouding trees.
The state does. The state does a good removal program. They do a management program that they, you know, get in there and do things. So, yes, it's not a set. It's not set for any, you know, main logger to go in and do something. No. But there is still a forest management program that does go on, and yet you still need a certain amount of those, you know, dead trees present in order to carry on other areas of wildlife as well. So in order for us to keep the ecosystem where we want it to be and be able to have the sustainability of homes for various things like, you know, raccoons and other things that are tree dwellers, we need to have a lot of that, those dead trees really play an important role. So we don't want to clear away all dead. It's not like you're looking to remove all dead. It's different. If it's in a person's front yard, I want to see that tree gone because I'm afraid that tree is going to fall on a structure. Yeah, no. So it does bother me sometimes when I can drive through a neighborhood or I'm out doing field visits on other things and I drive by a neighborhood area where there's, you know, substantial amount of dead trees in a yard. That's going to be a structural, you know, potential damage. Not, and if the tree's not leaning toward their house, if it's leaning toward the road, you want to think that that's going to be an innocent bystander. Yeah, no.
Yes.
So removing trees on personal property along that line does become important. You know, but if you've got a small woodlot, you do not want all dead trees gone because you will then change the entire environment of the ecosystem of what you have there. And you know, you want some small wildlife available in there. You want that wildlife to be able to control the other animals that you're going to have. So we want to keep the mouse population down by making sure we have, you know, something else that's going to be around to, you know, continue that life cycle and eat them. And you know, in turn, hopefully maybe cut down on the tick population, considering you know, that's where we're, you know, at another stage. And, you know, our tick population is just because of our milder winters that we have had the last few years. Our tick population is just at an extreme.
Right. Well, Saratoga has a good tree replacement program. And I think that's the importance of doing that, importance of replacing trees. Now, I had woods on Grand Avenue across our development. They tore down and built houses. And I had three deer walk down the middle of my road, and it's a residential area. Yeah. They had no place to go. They were looking for, and they looked scared.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're destroying the ecosystem ourselves. And I don't, that's why we're doing more than I think a carbon footprint. We are, I mean, this is crazy and it's only going to get worse. I mean, you know, around here, they're tearing woods down, putting housing developments in because they can make a lot more money. And I mean, some people will say that's progress, but not when you decimate, you know. I mean, it's pretty sad to see animals like that. And then there's more in around your home. You get more skunks and a possum and groundhogs.
You want those possum, though.
Oh, yeah, you do.
Because those possum are going to control those ticks.
But that's what I mean. They're around in houses where, you know, but, yeah, you talk about that. Yeah, I mean, I had at one time I had a Disney movie in my backyard. I had a skunk, a possum, groundhog. If they threw Donald Duck back there, I could have made a movie.
You know, but it was just Bambi in the backyard.
That's right. That's right. All right. Well, I want to finish up. I know we were talking about the county fair and the fact that so late as in much as into April and May, we were still at 20-30% capacity. We didn't know if you had to wear masks or didn't wear masks. And when the county fair comes, it's usually warm weather, and nobody's going to walk outside in 80-degree weather with a mask on trying to eat fair food. So just update us a little bit about that. And you gave a pretty sad statement about the 4-H.
State
fair.
Yeah, this year, because, you know, decisions have to be, you know, as you all know, decisions have to be made in a fashion that you're able to then work within. And where guidelines were at a particular time, New York State had made a decision to not have 4-H participate at state fair because we were not able to actually take youth to the fair, not house them typically at the fair where we would, and you know, be able to do that. So the decision was made to not have 4-H participate in state fair. Things have changed a little with state fair, but you know, the state made the decision back at the time where we knew that the numbers were only going to be still at that, you know, 20-30% max, and there definitely would not be any way for our youth to stay in the Syracuse area in order to participate. So we do not have anticipation of 4-H being at a state fair, which came in turn for our county fair because we are in July. We decisions had to be made as to where we're going. So it's still a little bit of a fluid decision with our county fair as far as what's really going to happen. The fair at this moment in time is going to be more of a Thursday to Sunday event versus the typical, you know, Tuesday to Sunday. Is that what we operate on normally, I think? It's sad. You know,
well, you got so much going on in that.
But, you know, that there will be carnival. There will be, you know, food. The kids are going to be there with their animals to do their animal shows. But we still don't have a lot of the same other smaller scale exhibits that we would normally have them, you know, showing. So there definitely is an event for, you know, folks to, you know, come out, see, enjoy. But not on the same scale of the event that that we would normally have. But as I say, things are fluid. Never know. Things can change a little. But, you know, trying to plan something to start in 30 days is very difficult. So
people are looking forward to it, though. I know.
So we definitely have an event for people to come out and be able to, you know, see the youth, see things going, and you know, enjoy some of that fair food that, you know, that we had very little of last season.
Okay. I want you to go to the Saratoga County website, and that is CCES. Well, let me start
it's
over
it's
again.
CCE Saratoga.
CCE Saratoga. I can't see from the
org.
Side here.
.org.
They have a great thing about the 4-H Training Center. They built a new building, and they're asking for donations. And as everybody knows, that 4-H property out there on Middle Line Road is a great, great facility for the 4-H. And by putting another building up, they can do more things. And you can pay by PayPal online or credit card. And any donation amount is, you know, would be a benefit. So get to that website. Don't listen to what I said. Listen to what Sue said. Why don't you give it to us again, Sue?
CCESaratoga.org.
All right. And we're going to end with tomorrow, Ice Cream on the Farm, Family Farm. Isn't that tomorrow on Father's Day?
It is tomorrow. We're doing this year. It is a drive-through tour.
Okay.
And so your ice cream on the farm is going to be your coupons to go get your ice cream at either Stewart's or King's. Both of them have supplied us with you know, coupons to give all of our attendees to go and get ice cream, depending upon, you know, there's no choice. It's whatever coupon you get. It's
right.
Either going to be Stewart's or it's going to be King's.
And that is where?
It is at Mill Creek Farm.
Okay, which is Mill Creek Farm.
Mill Creek Farm is out Stillwater area.
Oh, okay. All right.
You know.
Yeah, I think I did read that Stillwater area. All right. So thanks for taking the time. I know you're busy, and, you know, it's always great to see you. I wish we were on the radio because I know we get some callers.
Yeah, we definitely need to get ourselves all back into that realm of, you know,
right,
where we were at.
We really do. But once again, thanks. And I will, you know, still talk to you for contradicting me on the carbon footprint. But anyway, you have a great, great time.
Thank you.
Have a great weekend.
Thanks for having me, Rick.
No problem. And everybody, you have a great weekend. Happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there. and to the wives, mothers, daughters, take care of your father and give him a lot of goodies and Italian pastry if you can get to them. So everybody have a great weekend, and we'll be back next Saturday.